Hello, yes, and welcome to Literary Loitering, part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. We are the Geek Show's dedicated books and arts and culture, I guess you could call it culture. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we do. And it's our 100th show.
What?
Jesus Christ.
Depressing, isn't it?
How has no one stopped us yet?
I think it's because they're just afraid of us. When they appear with their snazzy coats and fancy jeans, we're going to start taking the mickey out of them.
Plus, I guess, given how long Brexit negotiations have gone, the committee to stop literary loitering must be... I mean, they've probably only just sorted out who's going to be on the panel.
Yes. Been a mite distracted for 3 years.
Oh, it's longer than that. You weren't here for the Bob Moss days.
I mean, it definitely feels longer than that.
It is true that a Rolling Stone gathers Bob Moss.
Which Rolling Stone?
I do remember he had a story about Keith Moon one time.
That he was it the Who, you Philistine?
Was it Keith Moon or the Who? I can't remember.
Yeah.
I've been at work all day. Leave me alone.
You're mixing
so let's just say stuff. Ringo Starr.
Yeah, Ringo. Well, I'm going to answer Ringo Starr to everything from now on.
Yes, later in the show we have some exciting ways to celebrate our 100th show. I nearly said 100th anniversary, which we haven't been going that long. But before then, we have some news stories, including, and I'm always delighted when this happens, one about the French going all French.
Yay! By the way, he's Graham, I'm Andrew, the other two are Rob and Sarah.
Hiya, I'm Sarah.
Did you start to throw that bit in?
Hello.
I'm not Rob.
Yeah, I'm not Sarah.
I like the way that your attempt to clarify this has made the situation even more confusing.
See, it's the 100th episode. You know it's going to be a train wreck.
It's okay. We can do it all again tomorrow.
Yes, no. I'm Graham. He is Andrew. Say hello, Andrew.
Bob, you should say something instead.
That's Rob.
See, it doesn't help when you say my name, Andrew.
And that's Sarah.
And there's no escaping from that.
Yes. And I realise we have just made our sort of bit where we explain who we all are into the equivalent of one of those problems where you've got a fox and a chicken on one side of the boat and the boat can only carry one of them. But stick with us.
I want to be the fox.
I was thinking it was more like some people who live in some houses, but only one has a dog with the black and white patches, and then one has a beige dog called, and one dog is called Ricky, and the other one doesn't see a dog, and then two people live with the dog.
Can I ask, is this some bizarre episode of EastEnders that I haven't seen?
Is this one of those logic cozy murder mysteries?
Oh, if only. I'd be well on home turf with that.
Oh, God, we're back to the pet mysteries.
Why don't you just leave the fox? I mean, that's not going to help with your farm, is it?
Yeah, but how are you going to...
You're just going to eat the chickens once you get there at night.
Yeah, but how are you going to answer the universal question of what does the fox say if you don't have the fox?
I mean, it says, what's it called, the rock to it?
That's that settled. The French. a festival called the Scene Young Adult for Young Adult Novels at the Salon du Livre in Paris has been criticised for a very, very bad transgression.
Can I just ask, is it seen as in S-C-E-N-E or seen as in I've seen a young adult, he's over there?
Yeah, it's just people comparing all the young adults they've seen. It's actually France's most popular pastime.
Yeah, listeners, have a guess at which one it is, the ridiculous answer or the logical one. No, it's
Lassen.
Sorry?
Sen.
Yeah.
Lassen.
As in the river?
Jeune adulte. qu'est-ce qu'il y a à manger? Des saucisses.
This is a disaster already, isn't it?
Right, where's that knotted hanky? Do you speak any English.
Aha, aha. I'm glad you said that, Bob, because the problem the seeing young adult is having is that, yes, they do. They have used forbidden words like photo booth, book quiz, and indeed young adult, which a ridiculous amount of French authors, around 100 of them, apparently the country has nothing else on, have written to protest against this disgraceful wordage.
Are they just feeling left out because there's the yellow jacket protests going on in Paris? It's like, we want to be protesting, but what can we protest about? I know.
It's quite remarkable that they haven't hitched onto the yellow jackets.
They have been doing this.
It's quite remarkable.
They have been there. Sorry, carry on, sorry.
100 episodes.
Sorry, Graham, carry on.
It's quite remarkable that they haven't latched onto the yellow jackets. I mean, when you launch a protest movement that is about nothing and everything, you'd think it would be expansive enough. But oh no, Leila Slimani wants her own protest movement, apparently.
Eat more fibre? That's the best thing I can suggest. Failing that, if problems still occur, see a doctor.
What you can say, Sarah?
The French have, I think they have a dedicated department to this, don't they, in the government to protect the French language from interloping English words. I think they were previously in uproar at Le Weekend and Le Barman.
Yes, this is true. In 2014, the then President François Hollande said that, and I quote, "To defend French is to promote linguistic pluralism because naming things wrongly means further adding to disorder in the world." Yeah, François, that's what's doing it all.
Yeah, that's what's happened. Verbal chaos.
So do they have any words like extra or anything like that, or xylophone?
Xylophone? I mean,
xylophone?
Maybe.
Those aren't French words, those are Greek words. Mm-hmm. So,
if we're getting to that level, no one tell the French, but all their words and all our words are just Indo-European words.
Yes.
We have an unhealthy love of Roman origins words, Latin origin words.
Also, don't tell the French, all the numbers they use are definitely not French.
Yes. Now, on the last show, I made a lot of jokes about a new breakaway centrist party. And I think we can all agree that the launch of that has been much funnier than anything I could have come up with. And it turns out that this French protest against English words has followed what you might call the Angela Smith model, which is to separate yourselves from a pack based on protesting against one thing very loudly and then publicly do the thing you're complaining about. You know, like Angela Smith breaks away from Labour, complains about racism, says something racist.
Yeah.
Now, the equivalent for this would be that if the group protesting against the senior young adults' use of English language words then made up their own sort of English language words, which was much more rubbish than photo booth or book quiz.
Please tell me these words.
Here is the sentence. See if you can work out the point where they bodge up. French lessons must include the rediscovery and reinvention of our language by students who are today victims of a stupefying globish.
Just back it up slightly.
That doesn't make sense.
What?
No.
What is globish?
Yeah, damn youth of today, communicating entirely in spheres.
Well, no, it's not a sphere, though. It's slightly spherical, but not quite. It's like an egg would be globish.
Is that what the Instagram egg was all about?
Globish.
I love Leila Slimani because she is, like, fractionally more French than the country of France. I was reading a Q&A with her recently where she bemoaned that a lot of new writers aren't very good and they only get attention because they, like, include transgressive or offensive content in their books. And I thought, Layla, mate, your first novel was about a sex addict and your second was about a woman murdering a baby.
Mm. Both of those things are really looked down upon.
A guy I was at university with, he was French and he was very proud of being French. And I remember one time he said, being French is more than just where you're born. It's part of who you are. I wear my land on my sleeve. And
I mean, you should probably wash it off then.
Well, my reaction to that was, doesn't your arm get tired?
Globish is a simplified version of Anglo-American English, used as a worldwide lingua franca. See?
Hi, God, it's a lingua franca. Isn't that exactly what they're protesting it isn't?
Sorry, franca, I should have said. See, Panglish. Yeah, it doesn't seem to... Yeah.
So, yes, should we move on to some true classy literature from the home of great novel writing, England?
Nah.
The home of great novel writing, England?
Yes.
Is that like Whitby or somewhere like that?
It's not sort of the home of great novel writing in England. I'm just saying, you know, Britain, it's a bit classier, isn't it, than the continent. We do literature well. Which is why there is a new exhibition online of erotic literature from the British Library's private case collection, including work by the possibly pseudonymous 18th century author Roger Firkwell.
What? Come on, man.
My favourite James Bond character.
The second name is so marvellous that it only hits you slightly later. Oh yeah, his first name's Roger. That's good.
It reminds me of, do you remember those Firkin pubs that used to be around one time?
Yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of those.
The Roger and Firkwell.
Sure, those must have been a delight to work in.
Was
whenever
that
someone gets a bit too tipsy, you can just yell, "Get out of my Firkin pub."
Yes, Roger Firkwell in real life we know was Thomas Stretzer, who died in 1738 at the hands of a mob of aggrieved literary critics. I've made that last bit up. He was the author of A New Description of Maryland. It's a woman's bits. In which he says...
But like a giant one that's also a door.
Does it have roller coasters?
I'm putting this down in the big book of theme park ideas.
Yeah, I know. That's why I went for roller coasters.
Yes, apparently the nature of the soil in Maryland is very strange, so that if a man do take a piece of it in his hand, 'twill cause, as it were, an immediate delirium, and make a man fall flat upon his face on the ground, where, if he have not a care, he may chance to lose a limb, swallowed up in a whirl pit. Roger, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I'm speaking from experience. That's not happened when I've been there.
Oh, no. I've got my girlfriend and the garbage disposal mixed up again.
When he's talking about the soil, I'm really confused. Really, really confused. Why soil?
Yeah.
I think it maybe means land more than soil.
I want to think that's what it is.
Or territory. Well, like, it's something that stuff. You own.
Yeah. I don't know where to go with this. I do gardening. I don't know where to go with this.
Well, he does talk about his tool.
Yes.
Is it a hoe?
No, it's a large... Well, it has a large radius inferior to none.
So it's a spare
bed. Yes.
I think he might be talking about swing baller. I can't be sure.
It's definitely not. No, it's a trampoline. It's definitely a trampoline.
There are some that actually have historical interest, boringly enough, including one of the earlier works of gay erotic fiction that survives, The Reverse of the Medal. But I think my favourite one is Harris's list of Covent Garden ladies, a pocketbook directory of sex workers that cleverly disguises their names. See if you can work out what surname this cunning pseudonym might be disguising. Miss SP hyphen NC hyphen R.
Oh, you're blinding me with your ways. My brain is befuddled.
Johnson.
Don't say Johnson in the context of this story.
See, my first reaction was Spanner? No, it's not Spanner.
Well, she's twisted a few. No, I'm not going to do it. It's tawdry. Yes, so I think we all can guess what we're all going to be logging onto after we finish recording this show.
Twitter.
Yes.
Not Whip Advisor, then.
No. I got banned from there.
Excellent. So we've got story now set in, and I swear to God, this is a phrase in the article. One of the UK's most challenging prisons.
Again, are you purposefully trying to confuse me because I'm tired from work, Graham? Because you're managing to do it really well. One of the UK's most challenging prisons.
It's basically the Krypton factor, right? Except it's a jail.
That's basically a Sylvester Stallone movie.
Yeah. Or Prison Break.
Yeah, I think they've buried the lead here. I want to know why this prison is challenging, but fortunately the story that we have is still pretty good. It is about a copy of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire found in a cell in HMP Nottingham, which you'd think, that's nice, children
read. Oh, that's why it's a challenging prison. Because you've got to read Harry Potter while you're stuck in there.
Well, it's nice to see children reading, isn't it? But it turns out that the prisoners have been using Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire for, I won't say the wrong purpose, although it may be the right one.
I was going to say counterpoint.
They've been smoking it.
They roll it up and smoke it.
They roll it up and smoke it after it's been impregnated somehow with a substance similar to spice.
Like the Harry Potter book, Harry Potter and the Spliff of Dreams.
So yeah,
Harry Potter and the Half Baked Prince.
Yes, nice.
Wait. Because I mean, like Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone is too easy. You gotta.
Yeah.
There is a certain stonerish tint to the Harry Potter novels, isn't there? The fact that they get longer and longer as they go along. The fact that J.K. Rowling actually spends her time thinking about how wizards poo.
I don't remember that in Harry Potter.
Have you not seen this story?
No.
No.
Do tell.
Oh, I thought you were just getting mixed up with all the turd that was on the pages of the Harry Potter books. It's been a while, and I've got a lot of the constant anti-Harry Potter rage build-up.
No, J.K. Rowling, it was part of that website Pottermore that she had, and she explained that before the existence of indoor plumbing, wizards would just poo anywhere and magic it away.
See, that automatically conjures up a whole raft of questions.
Yes.
You know, public decency laws, do they wipe?
Also, to where?
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The turd dimension.
That's a close encounter I don't want.
Yeah,
Chamber of Secrets.
My favourite comment on this, and I can't remember who said this, but it is excellent, is that I think it might have been Dan Olsen. who said that this proves that J.K. Rowling has simultaneously spent too much and too little time thinking about how wizards poo.
I mean, that kind of sums up the whole Harry Potter series, doesn't it?
See, if I was asked that question, I would just say, well, like any other person.
Yes.
Use your common sense.
It didn't need to be answered, didn't it?
Exactly.
It's like saying, how do wizards breathe? You can just say, well, they open their mouth, take some air in, put some air out. Or you can come up with a whole convoluted explanation that makes the whole situation much worse.
Is this the more Harry Potter content you all wanted? Because it's the more Harry Potter content you're getting.
Is it going to be later on when Harry Potter start? You know, when they do Harry Potter's children, like Harry Potter's great-great-grandchildren who now live on a council estate and go around stealing cars and swearing all the time?
10 out of 10 would read.
Exactly.
I've always thought the Harry Potter films need to get Ken Loach in as a director.
Oh, ow. Say goodbye to your fantasy.
All right, so I've got a story to tell.
You're right, that was a good story, thanks.
Are we all a bit sleepy this evening?
No, we're just waiting for Graham to continue.
I was waiting for some expression of interest, which I realise makes me terribly... Now,
as a female, I am used to doing that.
Look, again, we've been doing it for 100 episodes, Graham. There's no interest in that. Just quiet resignation.
Nothing you tell us will be surprising.
Yeah, I've been unpicking this story recently, which I first found out about when I was on the official website of a culture critic that I like very much, Nathan Rabin, formerly of the Onion AV Club.
Lovely.
And he mentioned that a while ago, he got a very bad review. And it was a bad review from somebody called Dan Mallory in the Washington Post, who reviewed his memoir, The Big Rewind, and gave it an absolute kicking, largely because Mallory hated the AV Club and seemed to hold Rabin personally responsible for every single thing he disliked about it. Also, for some quite weird bits, he said that the memoir included quite a lot of stuff about Rabin's pride in his Jewish heritage, and then said, but that said, this is undercut by his love for the Beastie Boys. And you think, what?
Are those related?
No.
Aside from the total lack of connection, what monster doesn't like the Beastie Boys? And
the answer is TERFs.
Yeah, I'll take that. Although this story does end up featuring the phrase, what kind of latter-day starling? So, you know, keep your powder dry. Yeah. So, like all bad reviews, this lingered in the mind of the person whose work was criticised for, I'd say, about 7 or 8 years, normal length of time, and then went away. Now, in a normal scenario, the next time Rabin and Mallory's paths crossed would be when Mallory's debut novel, writing under the pseudonym A.J. Finn, was turned into a major film, which it has been. It's called The Woman in the Window. It's been directed by Joe Wright, starring Amy Adams and Gary Oldman, and it is out later this year. In this dumbest of all possible worlds, Mallory has come back to Rabin's attention because of a lengthy expose in The New Yorker, which reveals Mallory to have fabricated several items on his CV, including such desirable experiences as his mother dying of cancer and his brother committing suicide.
Wow.
That's not good.
I mean, also very easily verifiable.
Well, yes. I mean, The New Yorker piece actually includes bits where he goes to Mallory's father and says, hey, up, isn't your wife dead? He goes, no. There we go. Flawless detective work. What is clear is that Mallory decided fairly early on that this personal story was central to who he was. He wrote applications for universities, including Princeton, where he included all of this information about his tragic life. And he was rejected, and he responded with the very sane and normal letter, "You heartless b-. What kind of latter-day Stalin refuses admission to someone in my plight? Not that I ever seriously considered gracing your godforsaken institution with my presence. You should be so lucky. But I'm nonetheless relieved to know that I won't be attending a university whose administrators opt to ignore oncological afflictions. Perhaps if I'd followed the example of your prized student, Lyle Menendez, and killed my mother, things would have turned out differently."
Sure, blimey. That's a burn.
I think the big shocker of this is that the person who wrote this actually makes his living as a writer.
How old was he when he wrote that?
I mean, I assume he was a teenager because it's a university application, but he is now in his 30s and he has not stopped doing stuff like this. He once faked his own brain tumour and wrote letters to all his colleagues in the guise of his brother. When he came back to work looking suspiciously healthy, one of his colleagues actually asked, you know, how's your brother? We don't hear that much from him since you came back from work. And he responded, and I quote, "Oh, he's dead. Yes, he committed suicide."
Excellent. I find as well that my life works out incredibly well when I take all my ideas from Daredevil comic plots.
What sort of a background does this guy have? Is it what sort of a background does he have? I mean,
well, first of all, he grew up in Depression era America.
He spent some time working on one of those traveling sideshows that went around.
His career really took off when he was the first man on the moon.
But it was all
even before he found the mystical hammer Mjolnir and became the mighty Thor.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the guy who discovered the God particle, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, but
I remember now.
This was all before he travelled backwards in time to the Second World War and then was injected with the super soldier serum.
He killed Hitler, but fortunately he did it so cleverly that we suffered no strange quantum effects from this. No, I mean, it may not surprise you, Sarah, to learn that his family are a bit rich.
Now, that's what I was hoping you would say, because now it makes sense. Complete sense. And, I mean, he's like a gnat's whisker away from having killed his parents, probably.
How big is a gnat's whisker?
Pretty petite. Yeah. I don't want to fat shame gnats at this point.
So yes, the New Yorker article, which I do recommend you read, includes a lot of detail about how he went through academia and the publishing industry, making lots of enemies along the way.
I wonder how he made so many enemies. He seems like such a lovely guy.
See, when you say he went through academia and the literary world, my immediate thought was, he sounds like a bad curry.
Yeah, Ian Parker's article includes a lot of fantastic anecdotes about people working out that he is a psychopath, including a phone call to a senior editor at a New York publishing company who worked with him, who says, "My God, I knew I'd get this call. I just didn't know if it would be you or the FBI."
Wow.
Oh, God.
He padded his resume with some pretty extraordinary and incredibly falsifiable claims, including, and I love the fact that this is the sort of thing that he thinks will make people look at him as a literary shooting star. He did a draft of the script for Final Destination.
Okay.
Is this a thing he didn't actually do?
He did not actually do this.
Okay, so you're saying he didn't write songs for Elvis.
God, he is. He is a man who wished he could have been the guy to have written the first script. Not even the final script they used, but the first draft of Rube Goldberg is the Grim Reaper.
He also, and I think Andrew will particularly value this contribution to culture, boasted that he helped publish the first of J.K. Rowling's Robert Galbraith novels.
Really?
Oh, his fault.
To the article from the prisons, whereby he believes that this is the case because the pages of the novel were injected with something.
Possibly, we don't know. Also, can I just ask, is J.K. Rowling aware of this? Because knowing her as we do, she is quite lawsuit happy.
Yes.
I know, it's okay, because he's actually also J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, it's a fabulous article, and I think that, you know, there are some really disquieting bits in it, though none more disquieting than the very end, where Mallory talks about his next novel, which appears to be about a thriller writer who gets revenge on an interviewer who digs up their past. I'm not giving advice directly to Ian Parker of The New Yorker, but run. Run very fast.
Didn't we do a story not long ago about a woman who wrote a book about how to kill your husband?
Yes.
Yes.
And that was it before or after she killed her husband or tried to?
After.
Yes. I think what we're dealing with here is people who were maybe not the criminal masterminds they write about.
It's like if you're a villain, your name is like Ian Robert Villain.
No, it's Ian Robert Louis Villain, so it's IRL Villain. That's great, isn't it? I love complete psychopath fraudsters like that.
Oh, God.
It's funny because we live an entire continent away from them.
Not for long.
Yes. So, should we go on to some of our exciting special 100th episode features?
Yes.
Well, there's this. I looked up, because we are turning 100 in episode terms, and that's all. I looked up what words were also turning 100. And the article I found that there was quite a few words that are really very familiar today. That were first sort of noted down in 1919. And the first of which is, I mean, you would have thought that stress is kind of a modern term, wouldn't you? I mean,
yes.
To me, it's sort of, you know, the last handful of decades maybe, but no, 1919, we've got something called anti-stress. The adjective anti-stress came along decades before de-stress, but anything that prevents or alleviates stress is called an anti-stress. So obviously stress was a big thing even 100 years ago, which makes it even more mysterious why nothing much has been done about it.
See, I thought stress had been around for a lot longer than that because it's an engineering term, isn't it?
Yeah, tensile and all that.
Yeah, stress and strain and stuff like that. When I did mechanical engineering at university, you guys know my level of humour is just above the gutter. So I'm floating around in that pool that's gathered after the rain. And when we were doing engineering, I couldn't help but try and keep a straight face when we were doing things like this, you know, the stress modulus and the strain modulus and the modulus of rigidity and the modulus of stiffness and stuff like that.
You didn't try and keep a straight face at all, did you?
No, I didn't. I clearly didn't.
And speaking of stress and, mental stress, they also had the word bats that came out referring to somebody who is mentally unstable or unhinged.
That's where Batman came from.
I think maybe it is Batman, because he's obviously been through a terrible time and
a lot of stress.
A lot of stress, to was his origin story. So it sort of, and there's that old, I think it's a Chinese expression that when you break something that allows the light in, and he fights for good things, he fights for truth and justice and everything, and it wouldn't have happened unless he'd been through this terrible time. Not that I'm suggesting, you know.
Maybe he just needed to smoke more Harry Potter.
A Danish pastry. Hooray for Danish pastries. Also turning 100 this year.
Wow, they'll be a bit mouldy.
Yes, they are. Well, I don't know when preservatives were invented, but yes, Viennese bread, also known as.
You can just scrape the mould off.
Or as it was known in 1919, that bloody foreign stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped listening when you said Danish, because in my head all of a sudden was Danish bacon, yummy, 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 yum.
Oh, you went in a little reverie there for a bit.
Yes, with Peter Schmeichel as some kind of weird Danish butcher. I don't understand.
Also turning 100 this year is yet another instrument I can't play. It's a didgeridoo.
I bet you can play the didgeridoo because you did really well with the harmonica.
In that I blew through it once.
I mean, that's all you need to do with a didgeridoo, right?
Yes, I think so. And talking about Danish pastries, linked to that, Dunker, that was invented about 100 years ago as well, before Dunkin' Donuts was invented.
And before Dunkirk as well.
Yes, yes, Rob.
That was quite a weird situation, wasn't it, when the word Dunkirk was invented in 1940? Everyone would say, well, we need to evacuate our lads from Dunkirk. From where? Oh, it's just the new thing they've got now. It's like, I don't know, Harlem Shake or something.
Also, Fooey was invented this time, 100 years ago. They came up with the surname of a very famous detective. and it took them till the 60s to think of the first names for that. But apart from that, it was a good start.
What if it was invented in Hong Kong?
You think?
Well, I always knew the number one super guy was a lot older than anyone suspected.
Also, Snooty comes from 100 years ago, and that means exactly as it does exactly the same as it does now.
Mm.
And I think probably my favourite has to be Super Pimp, which is exactly what it sounds like.
Whoa, yes, whoa, back up there.
100 years of very successful pimpery. I'm sure that's a word.
When he was first sent away in that rocket from the dying planet Pimpton.
I mean, it doesn't sort of outlay what parameters are involved in the determination of the term super pimp.
Were there feathered hats? You know,
tragically,
fur coats,
the biggest flares,
really high platform shoes with goldfish in.
With goldfish in, yay!
They also have like adjustable bits on the heels so that when you meet a contender for Super Pimp, you can just kind of crank your heels up.
So, yes, that's my list of words that turn 100 this year.
Fantastic.
I have a new superhero to create.
So, I mean, a lot of people genuinely respect our expertise on literature, right? We know that for a fact.
Obviously.
Everybody thinks I'm good at books.
But there are some books that we haven't read, though, aren't there?
Yes, there are.
If I count them on one hand, maybe.
Well, there's more. As Graham was saying, there's more books that he hasn't read than he has, and I'm in the same position.
I mean, I guess technically lots of books were lost in the Great Fire of Alexandria, weren't they? So,
well, there is a list of books that people claim to have read. And I think number one on most people's list would be, guess what? And Rob's read it.
Ah.
Is it That Which I Hate with a Passion That's Almost Holy?
Yes, one of the better throwing books. It's War and Peace.
That's Tom. The hardback version, you can kill a man with.
Yes.
And, you know, I would prove that happily if Tolstoy was still alive.
And it sat on my bookshelf for absolutely years before I thought, what are you doing? This looks really boring. You're never going to read it. It's about war. And worse than that, it's probably about peace.
Also, there's just a telly version now.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know one of the ones that that puzzles me, especially with the success of a certain TV show? I bought this and I read it. And I thought, it's actually kind of boring. The Complete Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Alan Conan Doyle.
You wouldn't have thought that would be boring.
The thing is, individual stories are actually quite interesting. But as a collection, it's kind of dull.
Right, why?
It's because there's only some of the stories, you know, the ones that got adapted for TV. They're the interesting ones.
Oh, right.
Do you see? And the rest of them are just kind of, yeah, not really much of a challenge there. You know, when there's a wife standing over a husband with a bloody crowbar saying he shouldn't have said that about our Shirley. You know.
The thing is, turns out in that story... It was a boomerang that killed him.
And he would have got away with it too if he hadn't written a blog called How to Kill Your Wife with a Boomerang.
So there's loads of like big name books that people claim to have read and they lie about reading. And I wondered if the team, meaning us, had read... Done similar.
Yeah.
Yes.
I once had dinner with someone who went off on one about her hatred of the book Lolita, and I was so eager to join in that I pretended I'd read it and hated it as well.
Were you able to comment on it critically?
The bit I hate most about Lolita, right, is chapter 8.
Classic lucky mistake. The bit you hated most was always, yeah, that bit too. That was my least favourite bit as well. I can't believe we have the exact same opinions on this book.
Well, I got caught out very early on in life. It was probably maybe I was 6 or 7. Probably a bit older, 8 or 9. And an official reading list at school. And there was a book I'd been carrying around in my bag and not reading for about a week. And I handed it back into the teacher and I just didn't want to read it. And it had a front cover and it was a ballerina on the front cover. And I said, yes, I finished this, miss. And she said, oh, what was it about? And I just looked at the front cover and I said, ballet? So she was just like, anything else, Sarah? Pretty much about ballet. So she said, okay, just take it away and read it, and then we'll talk about what it's about.
You've judged a book by your cover, completely literally ignoring the groundbreaking advice in that song from Mary Poppins Returns.
And for the first and last time, I assure you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, so I think that's the one I mainly remember. Anyone else?
Yeah, Shakespeare was my bane. We only had to do
You mean Shakespeare was actually super strong as a result of an injection of a strange venom and was played by Tom Hardy in a film?
Yes, and in a very strange voice he went, "Hubber or not hubber, that is a question."
And then it broke your back and you could only get better when Tom Conti punched you in the back in perhaps the most medically accurate piece of film ever shot.
So you saw that version of Romeo and Juliet then?
Yeah. I mean, I was worried by the fact that Theresa May saw that film and thought, right, there's our plan for the NHS.
Well, this is the thing, right? I never understood why people say, oh yes, I've read Shakespeare. I'm like, it's a play. You watch it, you don't read it, or you act in it.
Oh, no, you can read it.
You can read it, but it's kind of dull to read it.
And also, it's really quick to read. I remember I had a seminar on Henry the Fourth, Part One, and I read that in the hour before the seminar.
That's the thing. A lot of the emotion, a lot of that comes from the actors on the stage. And so I thought, I can't be bothered. I had to do Hamlet, Macbeth, and Romeo and Juliet. Right.
What's for this for A level?
This was GCSE.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah. I was a lot more advanced than most of the kids in my school, so they gave me harder things to do, which is how I ended up reading War and Peace. I've never forgiven that teacher.
Just thinking, Christ, this kid, what's the longest book I can give him so he'll just go away?
What do you mean you finished Hamlet?
Yeah, that was probably the thought process, because not only was I like top of the class in English, I was also one of the school librarians, and yeah, I know, I kind of deserved a lot of the bullying I got.
No one deserves.
Can we stop recording so that I can go back to Rob's house and just give him a wedgie?
Sarah, you didn't see me when I was a kid.
No, I did not. No.
Trust me, I looked completely the part.
Aww.
What if we make the picture for this episode that picture of you?
No.
Yes!
No.
With the giant milk bottle glasses and the bottle cut and the check shirt.
No. That's not happening.
If not the actual photo, then a source photo that looks like that. But loads of these books that people make a claim to have read are, I mean, things that people... I don't think I would find very interesting either. I wouldn't particularly want to read them. I mean, you've got War and Peace, but there's also Anna Karenina. I mean, you know, it's too weighty. It just feels like it's going to be boring. There's David Copperfield, Bleak House, Great Expectations, Oliver Twist, and it's Dickens.
Oh, yeah, there's one of mine. I've certainly never finished a single Charles Dickens book. The entirety of Dickens I've read.
I'm sorry, but they're so boring.
Yeah, I've read maybe a third of Oliver Twist.
Yeah.
And said, Jesus Christ, this is the dullest thing I've ever read.
Yeah.
Told it across the room.
Dickens, I put in the same category as Shakespeare. Better to watch it than to read it. Except for, there is one exception, which I did actually read fully. And that was the Pickwick Papers.
All right.
And that's the only one, the only Dickens novel that I actually started and finished, because like Andrew, I didn't finish any of them. I tried a few, you know, Barnaby Rudge, Nicholas Nickleby. I tried a few of them and I just couldn't get into them. But Pickwick Papers, for some reason, I enjoyed. Can't explain it.
Well, I mean, I know that I've read one of either David Copperfield or Nicholas Nickleby, but I confuse the two and I don't know which one I've read for school.
David Nickleby.
I think it was the one about the stuffy old white man.
Oh, yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
And there were some poor people.
In a big long car case that had all of the gripping thrills of a big long car case.
That's right. Yes, indeed. I think there was somebody who might have been a gross religious caricature at one point.
When I've had conversations with people over the years, some of the ones that have cropped up that people have claimed to read and then blatantly haven't, when you ask them about it in a bit more detail, stuff like the Odyssey.
Mm.
You know, the Odyssey and the Iliad, I've had several people saying, yes, I've read the classics. I've read the, you know, I think it was started around, you remember The English Patient? And in The English Patient, there's that bit where they're reading stuff from Herodotus. And that suddenly sparked this wave of people wanting to read all the stuff by Herodotus, which then led on to the Iliad and the Odyssey. And all of a sudden it became the trendy thing to be reading ancient Greek saga poems.
Hipsters are great.
Yeah, and the thing is, you catch them out so easily by asking them simple questions.
Yes.
I mean, in their defense, I 100% truthfully have read both the Odyssey and the Iliad. And if you ask me to name some details, bird ladies.
Yeah.
Which turns some people into a pig.
Yep.
Ulysses gets tied to a pole and he's a bit mental about that. And probably some other stuff happens.
His crew get turned into pigs.
That's Cersei. Mm. And the reason I know that is because Cersei is also a character in Wonder Woman comics.
And in the and in the Avengers.
Yeah, it's also actually a different Cersei, but we're not going to get into that here.
Yeah, 1984 is another one that loads of people say they've read but haven't.
All right, I think Orwell's pretty readable, I think.
Yeah, I think he is as well.
Excuse me. Sorry.
And I've just realised that I have a false memory of having read 1984, and I have not.
Ah.
I might have seen the film.
It's so easy to read that you feel like you've read it even when you haven't.
Either that
That's
or
a whole different question, though, isn't it? Books that you think you've read, but if you sit down and thought about it, then maybe you actually didn't read them.
Yes.
Yeah. Or books that you say you've read, but purposefully avoided on purpose because you looked at it and you went, I'm not really going to enjoy this. It's going to depress the hell out of me. Like The Diary of a Young Girl.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of those books where you think you should have read it, though, isn't it?
I think I should have read
Americans
it.
Like Americans for Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, I think I should have read it, but I know it would depress me.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
you know, I know
like
it would.
For years I knew that I should have watched Schindler's List, but I didn't watch it until I had to for my degree.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Schindler's List, obviously. I really like the bit where he says the thing about how he's actually secretly a big racist.
Yeah.
Very little punching for a Liam Neeson film, isn't there?
Yeah.
Probably, yes.
I've got a list of books that I found. I just want you to see if you can spot the odd ones out on this one. Right?
Yeah.
Starting from the book that, according to this list, most people say they've read, but they actually haven't, which is To Kill a Mockingbird. Then Romeo and Juliet, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, The Diary
of... Oh, yeah, you got most about that.
Yeah, The Diary of Anne Frank.
The longest one.
Yeah. The Diary of Anne Frank, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, Lord of the Flies, The Great Gatsby, The Scarlet Letter, Of Mice and Men, 1984... The Lord, The Lord of the Rings, Little Women, The Catcher in the Rye, The Bible.
Well, nobody's read The Bible, really.
Yeah. Homer's Odyssey, Alice in Wonderland, Pride and Prejudice, Twilight, Fahrenheit 451, The Iliad, Jane Eyre, Great Expectations, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, The Works of William Shakespeare, Are You Shitting Me?
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is actually a good book. You can
yes, it is.
I know.
Just read that one and enjoy it.
Yeah,
all the bits of it I wanted to read, and I was really interested in it, so I really wanted to read it. So I read them. So you know, but the Iliad, some dry Greek stuff. No, boring.
Yeah, I mean, this list has Goosebumps and Where's Waldo on it. I mean, when a list is including in amongst all these classic works of fiction, in amongst all those, it's got Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Twilight, Where's Waldo, and Goosebumps.
And Flowers in the Attic. I mean, no thanks.
It's full of quite short, easy to read books, isn't it? Which is a bit weird. Like, if I really felt a sense of deep guilt about not having read, say, The Great Gatsby, which I've read and liked, I would probably read The Great Gatsby. It's really short and readable.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was short. I might read it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Great Gatsby's not long.
But I started watching the film and it was just really dull, so I stopped watching it. In fact, if it hasn't been filmed, then I've probably not read it.
Yeah.
Oh, I know my worst one.
Oh.
What?
So, it was actually, I think, the year of our Lord 2015 when I read my first H.P. Lovecraft book.
Wow. But so, better late than never.
I grew world's largest H.P. Lovecraft fan young.
Well, you can say that officially now.
Yeah, I feel like at least that's one that I've rectified. But no, oh my God, for so many years I was like, yeah, Cthulhu, he's so cool, isn't he? And what a genius, and also, oh God, a bad racist. By the way, everyone, Ocean Lord Frost is a terrible racist.
Yeah. Please, sir.
He's the worst, and it's a good thing he's dead.
Yep. Please, sir, I have a question. Who, in their right minds, would claim that they've read Oedipus the King by Sophocles when they haven't?
Somebody who really wants to impress their mum.
So, we have so much in common.
Mallory would.
I mean, why would you lie about that?
Yeah. It's just occurred to me, Andrew's confession about not having read the works of a popular genre author whose name begins with two initials, the first of which is H, makes me want to admit I've never read a H.G. Wells book.
Really?
I don't think I have either. But so, I don't really like Victorians.
You never read War of the Worlds? Or The Time Machine or anything like that?
No, literally no H.G. Wells.
Have you ever listened to Jeff Wayne's musical version of The War of the Worlds?
That I have seen.
Yeah.
Good, yeah.
If you've listened to that, it's fine. You're good. You're good in my book. Actually, that's a lot more entertaining than the book, I'll be honest. I'm a sci-fi nerd. I'm going to gravitate to H.G. Wells and Jules Verne and stuff like that. You know this.
To be fair, I guess you could sit there reading War of the Worlds and just occasionally go, bum, 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 bum. It's probably not going to be the same.
I'll be honest, I actually listened to that version of War of the Worlds before I read the book, and I was doing that while I was reading the book.
Yes.
Do you know what I like the best about this list?
What?
Yeah?
That absolutely no one has bothered to even try and lie about having read Moby Dick.
I mean, I'm a big Melville fan, but I can understand why people find the extremely lengthy descriptions of what a ship is kind of off-putting.
It seems boring on the surface. It's about some guy fishing. Nah, that's a hard pass.
But it's the depths of obsession and also deep, deep-rooted homoeroticism that make Melville the great author he is.
Oh, the unspoken love between man and giant fish.
Whales aren't fish.
Oh, okay.
That's
see,
the main
if I read it, I would
have.
Know this.
I'll have you know, it's not. There's no manfish action. It's purely mammal on mammal.
That, of course, is perfectly acceptable.
Well, that's how it ends up at the end. He ends up netted to the whale.
Oh, God.
Well, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't think there's a single bit of homoeroticism in this book about a bunch of men crammed together in a ship looking for a big white swimmer.
No. They're chasing a giant white sperm whale.
Yes.
I mean, I was trying to at least be a little bit subtle about it.
Like I said, floating around in that pool that gathered in the rain just above the gutter.
What about the old man and the sea? Is that about something related, similar-wise?
I'll be honest, I have not read that.
Me neither.
It said, there's a quote that says underneath it, a review of it, a little mini-review. I've read this book and I really wish I hadn't. It was required reading at my high school and was the most boring book I've ever read in my life.
Okay, here's a question.
No, I haven't read it. I got brief reviews with The Ancient Mariner.
Here's a question, guys, then. What about books that you're proud that you didn't finish?
Ah, that's a good point, yes.
Oh, that's a good question.
Because for me, one of the things that I'm proud I didn't finish, I got 5 pages and then left it on a bus, is Twilight.
Well, I have no interest in Twilight or any of these stupid, vampire novels, but then I'm not the target audience, so...
It was a recommendation from a friend, and I've only recently forgiven them. Also, it was his copy of the book. So,
I mean, I guess I'd probably stick with Oliver Twist. I think that was also, like, one of the first times reading something that is considered, like, one of the great novels, and saying, actually, this is just a bit toss, isn't it?
Yep.
I think sometimes when I read a book that is so extraordinarily bad, I actually want to finish it more. Like, what's the first one in the Alexandria Quartet by Laurence Durrell? I forget.
You've put a bunch of words together.
My Family and Other Animals.
But I remember reading it. Sorry?
My Family and Other Animals?
No, that was what his kid Gerard wrote. Gerard is fine by me.
See, that's the only one I've read.
Yeah. His dad's books are spectacularly awful in every conceivable way. they have a very good reputation, although I felt vindicated for hating it because I later found out that the Alexandria Quartet are Ian Duncan Smith's favourite books.
Ooh.
I'm still sharp in taking of breath.
Yeah, I'm always suspicious of a guy who they refer to as if he was some kind of disease. They always call him IDS, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. And he is indeed an irritable bowel syndrome made human.
Yeah, any other books that you're proud of not finishing?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. There's been, like, quite a few of them.
What about any Austin books? I know you have a hatred for Austin, Graham.
I know, but I never feel proud of not finishing a book. I couldn't get all the way through Mother London by Michael Moorcock, and I still feel awful about that. I know I should like it. I know it's the sort of thing I should enjoy, but I just found it such a slog.
I'll be honest, Interview with the Vampire is another one.
Do you really just not like vampire books, Ron?
Well, you know, I'm forever looking for an interest. Right, I read Dracula when I was a kid, the Bram Stoker one, and immediately I picked up on the fact that Dracula isn't really a horror story, it's more of a love story than anything else, which was in complete disagreement to everybody else who claimed they read the book. Oh no, it's a horror story, obviously it's a vampire, he drinks blood, go away, leave me alone. Anyway, after that, I tried reading other vampire things, and it wasn't until I read a book called Yarrow by Charles DeLint that I actually got a different take on vampires. And that was a very short book. The writing was spectacularly overblown. I mean, I'm going to write it as if it's a poem. It was spectacularly flowery language. It was great when you're a teenager who thinks that they're going to be the next big writer. but yeah, Interview with the Vampire, I got bored halfway through and decided to watch the film instead.
The film is sort of interesting because it's Neil Jordan, and I love Neil Jordan, but he came up with a very good sentence about the book's shortcomings when I heard him interviewed once. He said, "The problem with making it a film is that there isn't really a structure. It's like Lewis is turned, and then him and Lestat just sort of bitch at each other throughout the centuries."
Yeah, and that's why I lost interest in the book. It was just basically, Lewis becomes a vampire. And then it's just this endless repetition of the odd couple. And that was it. And I was just like, this is boring. And so I decided to watch the film, and the film was more entertaining than the book. And I was surprised at how good Tom Cruise was as Lestat, which apparently also shocked the pants off Anne Rice as well, because she didn't want him.
She took out a big advert, didn't she?
Yeah, she really didn't want Tom Cruise as Lestat, but he plays a good bad guy.
She'd never heard of wigs and contact lenses, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird that Tom Cruise is so good at playing an immortal monster who sucks the vitality out of others.
He does his own stunts as well, though.
That's why he needs those precious life juices, Rob.
What about something like The Three Musketeers?
Well, again, it's a guy book, you know?
I'm a guy. I read guy books.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough for you guys, but, like, there's not much in it for me, I don't think. I wouldn't have thought so on the face of it.
I've never read any Dumas, I've got to admit.
I've actually lied about everything. I'm completely illiterate.
You haven't lied about that. You boasted about it.
Actually, you're right. I do on a regular basis.
So, should we wrap it up?
I think we've come to a natural conclusion.
Yeah, I think that the party's winding to a close.
Mm.
We've shamed ourselves enough.
Yeah. Oh, so 100 episodes done.
Yeah,
done. Locked in. That's in the safe. That's safe. That's in the bank. I've yep. run out of words. Sorry, I should read more.
If you want to listen to any of the previous 100 episodes, you'll find them all on our website or on Audioboom or Apple Podcasts. So whichever podcast provider that you're using, and if you are listening through anything like that, then leave us a rating, leave us a review, let us know what you think. It does help us with exposure, and it does help us, well, I say improve. I don't know if you can improve.
I think, as our centenary present, we could admit, it's never going to get better. This is it. This is the show. You knew what you signed on for, you dirty, dirty animals.
Just remember, if you pick at it, it'll never heal.
Also, I'm pretty sure I've done two podcasts this week where I've referred to the listeners as filthy / dirty animals.
Happy Christmas, you filthy animal. You see, that's from a good book.
Yeah. Until next time then, I've been Rob.
I've been Graham.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Sarah.
And someday we will get this right.
No, that is.
Do it in alphabetical order.
Until next time then, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening.